The Churchill Tapes, Are They Genuine? By Barry Fox in Studio Sound. Heated correspondence in the Guardian newspaper earlier this year brought an old audio dispute out into the open again. Are the world-famous recordings of Winston Churchill's speeches really of Churchill? Or were at least some of them made by an impersonator? This is not a nitpicking issue. Winston Churchill's wartime speeches are generally accepted to represent some of the best oratory ever recorded. Historians analyse them. Discs and tapes have been sold to the public round the world for nearly 30 years. They have been wonderful money spinners for Decca and now EMI. The recordings have many times been used in films and radio and television programmes. But 15 years ago, Norman Shelley, an actor famous for his BBC Children's Hour broadcasts, claimed to have made the recordings in place of Churchill. Shelley's claim has since been reported several times and received reasonably wide coverage. But no warning has ever been given to people who buy or use the recordings. Neither the announcer on the recordings, nor the biographical sleeve notes, even suggest that some of the speeches may have been recorded by an impersonator, or by Churchill, at later dates. Both Shelley and Churchill are long dead, and cannot set the record straight. The correspondence in The Guardian generated conflicting claims and counterclaims. Quite simply, no one now knows who they are listening to or when it was recorded. The record companies involved in releasing the material have adopted a singularly cavalier attitude to historical accuracy. Unhappily for the record companies, but happily for their customers, it looks as if speech experts at Sensimetrics in Cambridge, Massachusetts, have finally discovered the truth. They have been using Churchill's speeches to test the power of new technology designed to analyse speech and check the forensic pedigree of tapes brought to court as evidence. In May, Sensimetrics completed several months' work on 20 of Churchill's speeches. Their results support Shelley's claim and contradict public reassurances of pedigree recently volunteered by the BBC. The analysis also supports belief that some of the recordings made by Churchill have been heavily doctored with artificial echo to create the false impression that they were made in Parliament during the war, when in fact they were made years later in a small room in Chartwell. The record companies can no longer afford to play ostrich. Even if they do not take action voluntarily, members of the public are likely now to complain to trading standards officers about the record labelling. I already have, following failure of First Decca and now EMI to make any useful comment. In 1964, the Decca Record Company issued a set of LP records labelled The Voice of Winston Churchill, authorised by Sir Winston Churchill. In 1983, Decca's subsidiary Argo re-released them on cassettes. These were sold in record shops and by the Imperial War Museum. When PolyGram bought Decca, EMI took an exclusive license to sell the Argo recordings on the EMI Music for Pleasure label. EMI is now selling the Churchill cassettes widely. At the MIDEM International Music Industry Festival held in Cannes earlier this year, record company Thames Distributors promised a digital CD version of the same recordings this spring. At Cannes, Thames said they knew nothing of the pedigree dispute, and it was, quote, Argo's problem, not ours. Although Churchill made broadcasts and 78 RPM disc recordings for the BBC in London during the war, no recording was allowed in the House of Commons. But recordings of his parliamentary speeches appear on the commercial releases. In the 1970s, Norman Shelley broke silence and told what happened after Churchill made his rallying speech on June the 4th, 1940, at the time of the Dunkirk disaster. He spoke on a television chat show and mentioned in passing that he had recorded the speech for Churchill. I followed through by phoning his agent, who put me onto Shelley. I spoke with him by phone and wrote the story in a Hi-Fi magazine in 1977. Shelley told me how the British Council wanted to send a recording of the Dunkirk speech to the United States for broadcast to generate support there too. Churchill told the council that he was too busy to go into a studio and record it, but an actor fellow could do it as long as he approved the voice. Shelley recorded a test and later recalled how Churchill listened and gave approval. Very good. He's even got my teeth, Churchill told the council. Shelley also recalled how he then went on to do more impersonations. I heard all this firsthand from Shelley. The BBC later confirmed that Shelley did indeed record the Dunkirk speech in the Transcription Service studios near Regent's Park, but said recently that Churchill made his own re-recording for Decca in 1949 at Chartwell. At the same time, he recorded other missing parliamentary speeches. But on the Argo releases, these sound as if they were made in a large hall, like Parliament, not in a small room. Robert Berkowitz of Sensimetrics was previously with Dolby Laboratories and Acoustic Research. He has always been fascinated by the Churchill tapes. Sensimetrics currently work for the United States government's National Institutes of Health on computer speech synthesis and analysis. They have developed a PC-based analysis system called SpeechStation, which uses a radically new method of speech analysis. Conventional analysis of speech tabulates the energy at different frequencies, but variations in the talker's health or mood, the weather, the technical quality of the recording, and the room acoustic can all colour the sound too much to make such measures reliable as a so-called voice print. For SpeechStation, Sensimetrics looked for a speech characteristic that is more stable and difficult to disguise. Humans produce the vowels of speech by expelling air through the glottis, a slit between two folds of tissue stretched across the path from the lungs to the throat. Air forced through the slit causes the tissue to vibrate with a buzzing sound, which is rich in harmonics, spread over a wide range of frequencies. These excite resonances called formants in the vocal tract, shaped by the tongue, lips, and jaw. Typically, there are three or four formants, all below 3.5 kHz. These are enough to make speech clearly intelligible even over telephone lines of limited audio fidelity. The formant frequencies do not vary greatly between individuals, but the patterns in which they are combined reflect individual speech habits. There are always two or three formants at the same time during a vowel, and formant patterning is relatively immune from coloration. So, for SpeechStation, Sensimetrics adopted the approach of statistically analysing how often certain combinations of formants occur during speech. The system, hardware and software, for use with a PC costing around $2,000, converts analogue speech into digital code and analyses the code 50 times a second, faster than formants are produced, to identify the formant frequencies. Then, the formant combinations are plotted by frequency on a graph. The first formant frequency plotted against the second, and the second against the third. As each Churchill speech lasts 8 or 9 minutes, Many thousands of dots accumulate during each plot, forming clusters or clouds, where pairs of formants appear most frequently. The computer sorts the dots into boxes, 125 Hz square, and adds colour to represent cloud density, yellow for high density and blue for low density. The result is a coloured patch pattern on the computer screen, which shows how often the talker uses certain tongue, lip and jaw configurations. There is very little chance that the clouds generated over a period of minutes by one talker will match the clouds generated by another. 5 of the 20 speeches Sensemetrics analysed were recorded on public occasions, for example, after-dinner speeches, and can thus be taken as a reference for Churchill's genuine voice. The other 15 were obviously made without an audience and are thus suspect. The formant concentrations on 12 of these match the reference recordings, but on the other 3, the patterns are quite different.
You're listening to Sparks on Radio Fax 6205 and 12255, presented this week by Andy Burnham and Trevor Brook. Fresh Radio Fax programmes start on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays and Sundays. If you'd like to write to us, our address is Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU6, 7BG. I look forward very much to your letter and guarantee to read it out on air. If you'd like a reply in writing to your letter, which includes a station card, technical information and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence. 3 international reply coupons or $1. The address again, Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU6, 7BG. One such letter comes all the way from Finland, from Bengt Renman, writing from Vantaa. He writes, I'm 57 years old and I began DXing in the year 1952. I enjoyed listening to your station. Many thanks. He was listening on 6205 and he's got a Kenwood R5000 with a 50 metre long wire aerial.
Continuing with the story about the authenticity of Churchill's wartime recordings. And we've heard how 3 recordings are suspect. All 3 alien recordings are of speeches originally made in Parliament in 1940. One is the speech Churchill made in Parliament on May the 13th, when he became Prime Minister and promised the nation nothing but blood, toil, tears and sweat. Another is Their Finest Hour of June the 18th, when he predicted the Battle of Britain and warned of a new dark age for Europe and the US if Germany won. The third is the most famous of all Churchill's speeches, the Dunkirk rallying call, a colossal military disaster, which was made on June the 4th, 1940, and contains the oft-quoted pledge, we shall fight on the beaches, in the fields, in the streets, and in the hills. The announcer on the recording variously introduces these speeches as Winston Churchill's speech to the House of Commons, here is his speech, and a speech to the House of Commons. The sleeve note carries a picture of Churchill and the title Winston Churchill, a selection of his wartime speeches. The analysis now done by Sensemetrics clearly suggests that when people listen to these 3 speeches, they are unwittingly listening to an impersonation, almost certainly by Norman Shelley. The question must now be asked, how can the fake recordings have survived so long without complaints from customers, historians, and programme producers who use them? Even if people believe that the parliamentary speeches were recorded live in the House of Commons, perhaps as a result of some special wartime dispensation, there is none of the characteristic background sound of a debate. Artificial echo is a very poor substitute. Also, the voices on the alien speeches sound different to the casual listener, because in many respects the human ear is still the fastest, most wide-ranging and accurate analytical tool. But the more and the closer you listen to the recordings, the more confusing it gets. Churchill's voice changes significantly over the 5-year period of the war, charting the physical toll on the man. And Shelley does a remarkable impersonation, complete with traits and mannerisms. Decca's role in all this has been far from exemplary. The BBC only has documentary evidence to support the pedigree of the broadcasts that Churchill recorded on 78 RPM discs. But when Decca released the speeches on cassette on the Argo label in 1983, the sleeve notes described them as historic recordings taken from radio transcriptions dating from 1939 to 1945. The BBC acknowledged that Norman Shelley recorded his impersonation of the Dunkirk speech in 1940 for the British Council at the BBC's old transcription service studios near Regent's Park. But the BBC have always believed that all the parliamentary speeches issued for commercial use were private recordings made later by Churchill at Chartwell. In 1984, after I had published articles and made broadcasts questioning the role of Shelley, the BBC asked Decca to stop implying that all their commercial releases were sourced from the BBC, when the parliamentary speeches were not. The BBC have since then worked on the assumption that all these, including Dunkirk, were recorded after the war at Chartwell. By neat but clearly unplanned timing, Argo's release of the Churchill cassettes had coincided with the release by Argo of Norman Shelley reading A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh and House at Pooh Corner. Significantly, the record companies did not respond to the correspondence that appeared in the Guardian newspaper while Sensimetrics were working on the tapes. This followed from a reader's letter in April 1991. The reader thought that Ralph Truman, an actor with the BBC Repertory Company, had recorded Churchill's speeches. David Irving, author of a biography of Churchill, replied and told how Shelley had confirmed to him that several times in 1940, millions of radio listeners were tricked into believing that they were hearing Churchill's voice, when in fact it was Shelley's. Irving says he rechecked with Shelley when Martin Gilbert, another Churchill biographer, refuted Shelley's claim. Sally Hine of the BBC's Sound Archives irritated the original questioner when she wrote that Shelley's recording was not really an impersonation, simply an actor reading in Churchill's style. Several myths have arisen. It has now even been suggested that most of Churchill's war broadcasts were made by Shelley. Here, in the archive at the BBC, we have watched this story grow with great interest and some irritation. Sally Hine was clearly distressed to hear the results of forensic analysis. "You're joking," she exclaimed. "This just goes round in circles. What I wrote was what we at the archives believed and still believe. But we only have documentary evidence on the broadcast recordings we supplied to Decca. We have always referred queries on the Dunkirk speech to Decca." In 1985, the BBC issued a compact disc dealing generally with the war years, CD 3005, and this includes excerpts from some of Churchill's speeches. Although the CD is hard to find, the BBC helpfully supplied Berkowitz with a taped copy. He has now compared these speeches, which appear in excerpted form on the BBC CD and in fuller form on the Decca EMI releases. At least two speeches, Their Finest Hour and The First Year, are entirely different. The BBC's versions are almost certainly Churchill's later re-recordings. So the BBC's reassurances on the pedigree of the Decca EMI releases lose credibility. Surely EMI now have a clear duty to burrow into Decca's files and look for dates and authentication of these money-spinning releases. If there is no clear documentary proof that all the recordings were made by Churchill himself, EMI are surely now morally and legally obligated to put warning stickers on all products in the shops. The narration on the recordings should also be re-edited to make it clear that some of the speeches cannot possibly have been recorded on the dates given. At the same time, it would make sense to remove the appalling artificial echo which Decker added to Churchill's original historic recordings. That piece, all about the authenticity of Churchill's recordings of speeches, by Barry Fox in Studio Sound. So where are the sound engineers who were there when those recordings were made? Some of them must still be alive. They'll know exactly who recorded what.